The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. Today I'm joined by Morris Trent on the electric drum. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Mr. Morris, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fine. It's a pleasure to be here with you, Jose.
Tell me where you're from.
I'm from New Haven, Connecticut, born and raised. St. Rayfield's Hospital.
What neighborhoods did you grow up in?
Well, I grew up in the Ashman Street neighborhood, Ashman Street Projects.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
With four sisters, and I was the only son. Yeah. And.
Spoiled baby boy.
You know, not really. I had a younger sister, younger than me. She was more or less the spoiled one. And we always had our moments, you know. But my mother did take to me probably a little more because I was the only son. And so, yeah.
Tell me, what's mom's name? Come on now.
Oh, my mother's name, Nanny Booker. And okay. Then she married my father, who's also Morris Trent, so I'm a junior.
Okay.
And, so Nanny Booker Trent.
What kind of lady?
Well, my mother was a Southern lady. She was from Virginia. And Prospect, Virginia. And her father, which was my grandfather, was a preacher. He had five churches. And he was also a farmer. He has since passed away. But
what's his name? What's the pastor's name?
Reverend Booker.
Reverend Booker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so, got any stories about your mom growing up, or did you go down south growing up and visit Mr. Booker when you was young?
When we were younger, my mother would drive us down there to see my grandfather, and spend time with him. We would stay over his house, and he had chickens running around the house, and, you know, he had apple trees, plum trees, corn. He was really good at it, and so we would go there, and she would bring us there, and we would have fun there, and then we would come back home. But my mother would travel there even after we were home. When we got back home, she would go down there pretty often, you know, like probably three times a month. I couldn't believe it how she would drive like that.
And, wow.
It was nothing to her. I think she liked driving.
Okay.
It gave her, I guess, a sense of peace to kind of see the scenery and drive along and look at different things. But yeah.
Well, so what's one thing that from your mom growing up that you remember her doing, or that really instilled some kind of value in you?
Well, my mother, she was she believed in God and trusted in God, so of course we all had to go to church every Sunday. And I remember times we were all piled up in a white station wagon, and yeah, so we would go to church every Sunday, and so she was a big believer and trusted in the Lord. Yeah. So that was a impact on me, on my life, and I believe in the Lord and trust in God, you know. Yeah, and she also played the piano, but in the church, you know, or at home, but mostly at home, because she didn't play at the church that we went to, but she did play at home, and that kind of inspired me musically.
Oh, and your dad?
My father worked at Winchester Gun Factory. I grew up on Shelton Avenue, actually, 176 Shelton Avenue. I remember that address. And I remember when we moved from there, because we only stayed there for a little while in my life, you know, because I remember being in about a kid. When I got about 5 years old, we moved to Ashman Street Projects, you know. I think I was 5 or 6, yeah. And
what was your dad like?
My father was, he drank, you know. But he was a good provider. He was with my mother, you know. And he was there, you know. He mostly catered to my sisters. He would always say, "Mama, take care of the boys. Daddy, take care of the girls." That's what he would always say, you know. So, yeah, my father, my dad, yeah.
I see you reflecting on it, thinking about it.
Yeah, he was a piece of work. But he was there. Thank the Lord for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, as you know, a lot of fathers aren't there today. But yeah.
Wow. So what schools did you go to around here?
I went to Lincoln Bassett for a minute, hot minute. And I went to Troop Middle School. I went to Weber Cross. And from there, you know.
When did you pick up an instrument?
Actually, there was a kid that lived on Shelton Avenue, and we used to take rubber bands and put them on a piece of wood and get sound out of them. And that inspired me kind of like musically, you know. And we would make like guitars, kind of like, I guess you would say that, or if you would call it that.
Instrument.
Yeah. But when we moved to the projects, there was a neighbor. Guy, rest his soul, nice guy. His name is Michael Ellis, and he had a big family. His brother was a martial artist, Bubba Ellis. He's still around, great guy, and he would teach me martial arts and stuff. But I think he liked my sisters because I had 4 sisters. So.
Hey now,
and so his brother Michael had a folk guitar. So when I saw that, I begged my mother to get me a guitar, you know. I said, I want a guitar, you know, because he let me play it, and he was playing, you know, some simple things on the guitar. And I tried it out, and I'm like, I have to get one of these, man. Oh, man, I need one of these. So I begged my mother. I would cry, "Mom, I want a guitar." Well, I begged her so much. There was this music store called Sam's Music Store on Dixwell Avenue. This is, we're talking about 40, 50 years, no, yeah, 60 years, maybe, no, yeah.
Wait a minute. He's mathing the math, folks. Yeah. He's mathing the math.
50-something years ago, you know. And she finally got me the guitar. We went to the music store, Sam's, and it used to be right above it, there was an after-hour call, Mr. Ray's, you probably heard about that.
Oh, that was before my time. Don't be throwing me up in there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Mr. Ray's. Oh, man. But it was down, it was right under him. And but I think they had moved. By the time Ray's opened up, I think they were gone. But it had a lot of musical instruments there, and amplifiers, guitars, basses, all kinds of things. And I liked it. You know, so I looked and I saw a nice guitar, and I wanted that guitar. My mother eventually bought it for me, and so I actually started playing guitar first. So then my sister said she knew someone that also played guitar, and he could teach me, you know, how to play Shaft. This was back in the 70s. So I said, wow, I want to learn how to play that. So I met him. His name was Robert Harriet. We grew up to be best friends, and he's a preacher now. And, yeah, we became good friends. So he showed me how to play that. I said, well, let's put a band together. So I took two of the strings off the guitar, and that's how I started playing bass.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Morris Trent Jr. I got to get it right.
Yeah,
so, I mean, it's when you don't have, you got to get creative, right? I mean, you put rubber bands on a piece of wood.
Yep.
Then you took two strings off of the guitar, and now you're playing bass in a band. So you're self-taught, basically, or did you have some?
Well, at the beginning, I was, you know, because I was just experimenting and learning what off of records what I could, and then I played with some local R&B groups back then, and one of them was called Inner City Funk, and I played with those guys, some great musicians. They were actually similar to Earth and Fire. There were a lot of good bands back then. But we had no backing. We had this manager, and they called him Sweetback. And then he was a Sweetback, too, because he ripped us off. But anyway, so that band broke up. And there was a good friend of mine. His name, we called him Pineapple. His real name is Gregory Nixon. And he could play any instrument. I mean, he was just phenomenal. And so when the band broke up, we played together in Inner City Funk. So when we broke up, he said, man, I know somebody we could play with. I said, yeah. He said, yeah, man, I'm going to take you to meet him. And so he took me to this club on Dixwell Avenue called Sully's. And they had a jazz session. So we went in there, and was a guy playing piano. And he said, that's the guy right there. I said, who's that? He said, that's Eddie Buster. And so I said, Eddie Buster? I said, so he introduced me to Eddie Buster, and Eddie had a brother named Bobby Buster. So when I met Eddie, that was the real start of my jazz career, because Eddie was a phenomenal musician. He played with Sonny Stitt, Gene Ammons, and a lot of great musicians. So I ended up working with Eddie for 26 years until he passed away. And but it was the best lesson I had in music, and that helped me immensely.
Mm. You went from playing the radio tunes, pop, we call it pop music now, or back then, you know, it was R&B, classic R&B, funk.
Right, yeah.
And then you get into jazz. And jazz is more about rhythm and freedom. Did you find that so? And did you have to? Because you have to be truly creative.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's an expression, but it is technical also, because you have major, minors, flat fives, sharp 11s. 13s, you know, and so on, major nines. And so when a song is being played, depending on the chord structure is how you have to solo within that chord structure. So you just can't play anything anywhere. So, yeah.
Yeah, because people think jazz, oh, this guy's just riffing.
Yeah.
But there's actual technique behind this.
Right, there's structure to it. Yeah.
Who gave you that structure, or who?
Eddie and Bobby Buster.
Okay.
Yeah, they helped me with that. Yep. Because they're great musicians. They helped a lot of musicians actually in New Haven. Yeah.
And we're talking about can you describe Dixwell at the time in the 70s? Because it's lost on people how many clubs there were in the New Hallville section where you can go jam.
Yeah. They're, like, you know, you had the Monterey, you had the Black and White, you had the you had Newt's, Kenny, what was it? What's the name of that?
And we're talking about Newt's, the one that was behind the back.
Yeah,
the back.
There were a lot of different clubs.
Lot of different Newts. But yeah. Newt's was started off in the back somewhere. Mm-hmm.
And the Monterey had a lot of, but see, I caught the Monterey at the end because I was a younger musician playing with older musicians because they took me under their wing.
Okay.
So I caught the end of it. I played there a couple of times. You know, you had great musicians that would come through there. I mean, names, you know. And,
Then things fade away and change.
Yeah.
So you went from guitar to bass.
Mm-hmm.
And then for a majority of your career, you've been a bass artist?
Yes and no. I guess both. Still both. I still play both of them, you know. And but most of the work I get is on bass because apparently they need a lot of bass players.
Not a lot of them out there.
Yeah, there's some, but yeah, if you're a bass player, I think you can get probably more work, you know. It depends too.
Tell me a little bit about your first gigs. As a jazz player, and where did you travel to, and who you get to work with?
I was with Eddie. That's it.
Eddie, yeah, all right.
Eddie took me under his wing. We played. I played at Sully's with him, you know, when I was learning. You know, I played at Erica's with him when I was learning. I got an opportunity to play with some name artists, Frank Foster, ended up directing Count Basie's band. So I had the pleasure to play with him. And that was an amazing experience. What a player. Let's see, whatever. A lot of places that were locally, because Eddie came off the road around that time, him and his brother. So they came back. They're originally from Bridgeport, but they came back and settled in New Haven. So most of the stuff we did were local at that time, you know.
When did you get out? Did you ever get out? Did you ever hit the road?
Actually, there was a spot that I didn't mention that was before the Inner City Funk Band. I worked with this gentleman by the name of Ronald Jones. He was a good guitar player, and I don't know if I should say this, but anyway.
It's okay.
He is a great guitar player, but yeah, so we worked the Chitlin circuit.
Mm-hmm.
I went on the road with him.
Okay.
And we worked up in Maine, Portland, Augusta, Caribou, and then we worked in upstate New York at that time, Poughkeepsie, Plattekill, Newburgh, and places like that. It was about a couple of years on the road with him, you know, and it was a good experience. We ended up being a Elvis Presley backup band. There was an Elvis Presley impersonator that we would back up, and we do our set first, and then he'd come on and do his thing. He would come and do his thing, yeah.
Any kind of gig,
yeah,
as long as they pay.
I mean, that was the Chitlin circuit for real.
for those youngins out there, Chitlin circuit is for black folk. It's where you would go out and you find juke joints and smaller venues, and then it was usually black only crowds out there. So, you know, because these kids here, Chitlin, what they talking about? did music save you from the streets? Because, I mean, there's a lot of drugs and heroin at the time, still to this day, but, I mean, more prevalent back in the day.
Yes, it has. Actually, you know, I had my run-in with those substances, if you want to call it that, you know, and thank the Lord I'm free from that now, you know, and years ago, because I had a family to raise and I couldn't continue doing things like that and try to raise a family. So I quickly learned and got out of that lifestyle, and Because it was there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're young, sometimes you want to experiment. And sometimes you, when you try it, you can't come out of it. So you have to, you know when it's time to quit.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is Morris Trent Jr. I'm Jose Candelario. So you're out there and you're staving off the temptation of the road. You know, you've lost, you've seen talent go awry because of the substance abuse. Mm-hmm. What was your perspective on that? To just see talent go to waste, literally.
Yeah, there was some brothers that actually had that fate. They indulged so much into the alcohol and drugs, and they ended up dying young, you know.
Hmm.
They didn't.
Couldn't even see their prime.
Yeah. They were good singers, too. Yeah.
Family saved you. Yeah. Focus, I mean.
Yeah, family, God saved me.
God saved you, gave you family.
Yeah.
I mean, can you talk about making life? I mean, you're a musician and you get paid to make music. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people can say they've done that in their lives. I mean, it is so difficult now. Was it easy for you? Was you always employed? Did you have to, was there ever a struggle or a low point?
Yeah, when I was on the Chitlin circuit, I mean, that was a gig, you know, not paying much, but it still was a gig, you know. And after that, I mean, it wasn't always plenty of gigs. But being that I was with who I was with, Eddie Buster, it did help. It made it easier. I was playing five nights a week in high school.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, I was 18, 19 years old, playing every night.
Wow. So, but as an adult, did you have a regular job in music? Or?
Oh, yes. I worked some jobs, but I worked at the University of New Haven for some years. I worked at Virginia's Chicken Shack. That was way back. You know, I worked at Shoe Factory. I just worked because I had to take care of my family.
Oh, okay. All right. Because you make it sound like music was paying all the bills, but now you had a supplement.
Right. I had a supplement. Yeah. I mean, it could have. It was, you know, if I lost my job, I would have made it still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just that I needed the insurance. With the insurance, you know, the benefits were more than the, it was better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as a musician, you ain't getting no medical benefits as a musician.
Yeah. So I had to have that. Yeah, and plus, you know, again for my kids, they needed that stuff. So
yeah, see, you thinking about it now, all the sacrifices you made, and the thing is that you kept feeding your talent and you kept striving to be a musician. I mean, you never gave up on that.
No, that's what I. That's what I've done for a long time, and that really is all I know.
How has the scene changed? He just rolled his eyes. Like, do you think people still have the same affinity for jazz as they did before, or has a culture really moved away from it? Do you find now jazz more embraced by a rainbow of people, black, white, Hispanic?
Yeah, I mean, there are a variety of people and cultures that still listen to it, but our culture is more into the, you know, the newer music, I would say. I wish our culture would have a better understanding about the jazz music that was brought here to America, you know. And had a better respect for it,
mm-hmm.
a more knowledge about it anyway, because it is our music, you know. So, but like I said, they're into a different thing now with the music has changed for them. Except there are some good music teachers out there, a friend of mine, and a couple of friends of mine that are keeping the jazz going, to a degree.
Move the mic.
To a degree.
There you go. Get on the mic there.
Yeah.
So you do have people teaching and learning jazz. It has changed. You, over time, have you evolved? Is your style of play has changed over time, influenced by pop culture, or do you stay to the foundation given to you by Mr. Buster?
No, because I play everything, every type of music. I like all kinds of music. I don't just, I wouldn't want to be stuck on one type of thing, because I think it's all good and useful at some point. It's good to have different varieties of music that you could play, especially when you're working in a club that has a mixed audience. You want to be able to make everyone happy.
Hmm. In all of the years that you played, what was your favorite club to play?
Well, I don't know if it was a club. I remember one year, Eddie and I played in Nantucket. Oh. And we played the whole summer. So wow. I would say that was a great gig, yeah.
Oh, man. And it's living the gig lifestyle. Do you recommend that for anyone in this day and age?
To be a musician?
Yeah.
I mean, it depends. I don't think it would hurt. Because learning music and studying music, it opens your mind up in different ways. It could be an added attraction to your learning.
Mm-hmm. What would be a piece of advice that would give young Morris Trent Jr. when he first pick up the piece of wood and rubber band? What would you whisper in his ear? What would be that big piece of advice for this kid?
Oh, wow. Get a guitar.
Once you got the guitar, then what would you tell him? Practice every day. Are you a daily practitioner? Like, there's guys that just noodle all the time. I mean, when they're young and to this day, are you a noodler or... You just now, warm up a little bit and then just jam.
Well, I have to practice. You have to always practice, even if you are an accomplished musician, I believe, because you have to keep your chops up and keep up.
Mm-hmm. So you got to keep up. You got to keep them fingers warm.
Yeah. Keep dexterity going and flexibility and up with the music that comes out. Sometimes you have to play the modern music.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say learn to read music. That's a good plus. And practice.
All right. Thank you so much. Now, do you have a band now, or is it?
There is.
I see you in trios.
Yeah, there's a band that I've been working with. It's called Black Velvet. It's a singing group. So we do play together and do things, So, yeah.
All right. Be on the lookout for that.
Yeah.
How can they get in touch with you? What's a good number?
Oh, 475-766-9999.
All right. If you need a bass player to come, he does all occasions.
Yeah.
Bar mitzvahs, picnics,
funerals.
Hey now, if it calls for it, if it's in the will.
You need it, whatever you need, we can supply it.
Let me tell you, you are a true jazz artist. You just lay back. You just, has this persona, like, it's, have you always been like that? Or is it that you think it's. You're not even aware of it now.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
He just moved, lay back. And, right. Very good.
But thank you, Jose, for having me here.
Oh, you're welcome, buddy. I appreciate you taking the time. This has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. This is Morris Trent Jr. and his journey through jazz music here in New Haven. I mean, you can tell how excited he is when he starts talking about the good old days. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
And everyone that's out there, thank you very much for listening.